are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today, we will once again start with a few updates from around the league. We'll jump back into Wolves draft history. If you missed Friday or Monday's episode, we have gone back through what's going to be the last 11 Timberwolves drafts. We're going to finish our look back by talking through the 2011, 2010, and 2009 drafts. I promise we'll go no further than that. It gets, it gets a little hairy if you go back into the Kevin McHale years and some of those final drafts. And also, you know, the 11, 10, and 09 drafts are give us plenty to talk about. That's the sweet spot of the David Kahn era. So we'll go through each of those here shortly. But first, a quick reminder to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. All right, so the big news, I guess, from Monday is that the NBA, I mean, at least via multiple analysts on ESPN, the NBA is not ruling out the idea of playing into September. It was about a week ago that it was announced, or not announced, but it was discussed pretty widely that the league was looking at playing into August, and that was seen as a little bit crazy, a little bit out there. Man, the season's going to drag on forever. What is that going to do to the draft? And now, clearly, there's been some rumblings about September. You wouldn't have multiple analysts talking about it on the same day. And basically, the gist of it is that So Ramona Shelburne on Outside the Lines on ESPN said that basically, I'm paraphrasing here, but owners and players want to save the season. They don't want to not crown a champion. Of course, there isn't any precedent for the NBA not crowning a champion. That did happen in baseball in 1994 with the strike. The season ended in August. That was the infamous, the Expos were the best team in baseball that season, arguably. And of course, have never that franchise up until this last year when the Nationals, which is technically the same franchise, won the World Series, had never really seen success. And so that was a big deal. The NHL, of course, did have one whole season wiped out because of a work stoppage, a labor disagreement. But the NBA doesn't have any precedent for starting and stopping a season and not crowning a champion at all. So clearly that's something that even if there's going to be an asterisk and it's going to be, there's going to be some weird, you know, but remember this happened type things. I mean, the NBA's had champions in a 50-game lockout season back in the 98-99 year. I think it was the Spurs that won that season. And then, you know, they had the champion just a few years ago, or I guess almost 10 years ago now, in the 66-game lockout season, not all that long ago. So clearly that's the preference here, is to actually name a champion. Other analysts that talked about it, Jalen Rose, said that he did, you know, the NBA could start in mid-July or August and doesn't need to worry about the NFL. And then Brian Windhorst echoed that too and said he wouldn't rule out September, and that said the league will do whatever it takes. My personal opinion, my two cents on this, is I think they certainly would consider going into September. They're not going to wait until August to start. I think they would start in, you know, July at latest with no fans if they need to. But they're not, you know, if you start in September, when are you going to start the next season? I mean, if they start in September and finish in, call it October, early November, they're not even going to try to start the next season until late January, early February. And now that's thrown the calendar way out of whack. You're essentially going to play two shortened seasons, or you take out some of the playoff series. Or I don't know what you do. And the players aren't going to, even if the players don't need much time to ramp up, this still isn't a real off season. They're not getting to travel. They're not getting to vacation and spend time with friends or whatever it is they want to do. They're stuck in isolation. So the players are still going to want an off season. So I don't see the league going. I really would find it hard to believe that they go into September. I get that there's too much money to be lost, but there's so many hoops to jump through to make the 2020-2021 season work in any semblance of the word if this season goes too late into September. But we'll see. And certainly, you know, if teams are willing to play matinee games to fit them in, you know, to play like 1 p.m. games on a Tuesday, or I don't think there's any scenario that the league would allow double headers, but maybe there's back-to-back-to-back, similar to what would happen in a lockout year. Or maybe it's an agreement where, like I had suggested a few weeks ago on this podcast, to get to a 70-game threshold so that regional sports networks are being paid. Maybe the league looks at each team getting to that threshold by playing 5 to 7 games as a ramp up to the playoffs. And it's not going to have much effect in the playoff picture because there was a couple games clearance. So basically the teams that are in 8 seeds are just going to have to hang on for dear life. But basically just agree to finish out 5 to 7 regular season games and then shorten the playoff series to 5 games. I think if they start in mid to late July and do that, they can wrap up before the end of August. And maybe it bleeds into the first part of September. And then at that point, you just want to avoid playing games during NFL, you know, opening weekend or whatever that is. So I think that's the most likely scenario. So it might bleed into September, but there's no way they're going to wait until August or September to start playing again and still try and claim a champion. I think that that would be a difficult thing to do. So at any rate, that's the update there. There isn't really anything else related to the coronavirus to update. I did have a couple of other quick notes for college basketball fans and for Minnesota sports fans. You probably saw the note that Daniel Oturu, the Minnesota Golden Gophers starting center, has declared for the NBA draft. He was a sophomore this year and was really good as a freshman, but averaged a 20-10 with almost 2.5 blocks this year for Minnesota. The Gophers would have narrowly missed the NCAA tournament. They kind of fell apart towards the end of the season. They lost a lot of close games, had a tough schedule, and the team was probably better. You know, all the advanced metric ratings, the KenPom rankings, all suggested they were a better team than what the results were. Some would argue that's coaching. Some would argue that's luck. I think it's probably a little bit of a combination of the two. But without getting too in the weeds on the Gophers, tough loss for them for Oturu to go to the draft. It makes sense for him to do it, he's currently being mocked as like a very late first round, early second round draft pick. And I'm not sure he's the type of guy who's going to wow too much in workouts. He's not a great jump shooter. He got better as the year went on, but I think that could have been a little fluky. I'm not sure he's as good of a stretch big man as maybe he showed late in the season at Minnesota, because he didn't really shoot the ball at all from the outside the paint as a freshman, and he didn't early this season either. But we'll see where he ends up. That's interesting. Other players that announced, Duke's Trey Jones, of course, the brother of Tyus Jones and a Minnesota native. So that's significant for folks from Minnesota. And then Isaac Okoro from Auburn also declared as expected after his freshman year. So this is that time of year where a player, you know, it's such a weird climate. I don't envy those guys making the decision at this point in time, whether you're going to stay or go back. It's an unceremonious way for their college careers to end, to be sure. And also there's some question marks. They don't get the opportunity to perform in postseason play, whether it's March Madness or another tournament, and there's no real closure. So we'll see what that does to their draft stock. I know that some divisions of the NCAA are looking at adding additional years of eligibility for players who saw their career end because of the coronavirus pandemic. And you know, kudos, I guess, to the NCAA to try and figure that out. It'll be interesting to see where everything lands. Definitely. And then one other NBA note, this is just kind of funny. Stan Van Gundy has made it very clear he's not interested in the New York Knicks coaching job, calling them, where's the exact quote? He said he's not interested in the New York Knicks. He called the organization, quote, extremely dysfunctional, said he has no interest in becoming their head coach. And then I think he realized as he was talking that he might have been putting his brother in a tough spot, who of course used to be the coach of the New York Knicks, you know, 20, 25 years ago, but said, if anyone would be interested in that, and I'm not sure he is either, it would be my brother. So, awesome that Stan Van Gundy said that. I mean, he speaks his mind. We know that. Also good news for Wolves fans is that means that the Timberwolves organization is a notch above the Knicks organization in the minds of the Van Gundy brothers. If you'll recall back when Flip Saunders was hiring his head coach and, before he ultimately hired himself, and then, Sam Mitchell became the interim coach when Flip Saunders tragically died in the fall of that season. But both Van Gundy brothers were considered. There was even the Flip Saunders went to a Twins game with Jeff Van Gundy. There was rumors Stan Van Gundy was interested in the job. And both guys, you know, saw value in coaching a team with Kevin Love and with some high draft picks. And then ultimately that didn't happen. And Saunders hired himself. And then Mitchell coached the team. Saunders never actually took the sideline as a head coach in his second stint with the Wolves. And then the rest is history in terms of Tom Thibodeau coming on board shortly thereafter. So an interesting note there that Van Gundy was willing to be so open about his disdain for the Knicks organization. And who can blame him, really? I mean, everybody knows the mess that they are and some of the things that have come out of come out of the Knicks organization in recent years, or really not even just in recent years, but over the past couple decades overall. All right, next up, we're going to dive back into some draft talk, but not this year's draft. We're going to look back. You know, we've got plenty of time to talk about this year. Let's talk about past year's drafts. We already went all the way back through 2012 as part of this three-episode series. We're kind of breaking this down into multiple segments. So today, I want to talk through 2011, 2010, and 2009. So we're going to get up to that, get into that next. First, I did want to mention our new friends at Blinkist. Let me tell you about one of the ultimate life hacks. It's hard to find the time to sit down to read and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. Successful people, like business leaders, are well known for reading a lot of books. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of a book quickly so you can start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, on your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health, to history books. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read but never had time to. I would suggest listening to Blinkist when you're driving in the car, if you're commuting, or right now, hopefully you're working from home. So perhaps it's when you take your morning walk, which ideally is taking the place of what would be a commute. It's important to keep that routine going. So get your morning walk in, or get an exercise in, listen to a podcast while you do it. And that would be what I would suggest to be the best way to do it. A book that is hot on that app right now that I've listened, or that I've actually read previously, and probably is about the time to do a re-listen here with Blinkist, is The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. Really interesting book on how to basically maximize your time and, you know, fit the most you can into your business day, into your work life, and be successful while doing it. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA. Try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. All right, it's time to get into our time machines. Talk 2011 draft. This was the infamous draft, the second to last conducted by David Kahn, the third, of four drafts that he was in charge of, in which the Wolves held the second pick and took the consensus second best player in the draft, but then spent the rest of the draft trading back and trading back and trading into future years to accumulate money to pay for what ultimately was Kurt Rambis's buyout. In fact, this was so obscene the way that the Wolves did this throughout the night. It was just this running joke as the night went on, that the league actually changed the rules about how much money NBA teams could get when they're trading back in a draft, essentially how much you can sell a draft pick for because of the Timberwolves and because of David Kahn. This was just a weird draft. So heading into the draft, the Wolves actually had the best odds at winning the lottery. They had the league's worst record the year before. Unfortunately, the Clippers pick that was owned by the Cleveland Cavaliers that had only a 2.8% chance of being the number one pick, that came up for the Cavs, and Cleveland jumped over the Wolves, got the number one pick. That meant they got Kyrie Irving, the consensus number one pick after he had an abbreviated career at Duke, and the Wolves had number two. The consensus number two player was Derek Williams. It's hard to fault the Wolves for taking Derek Williams in this draft. He, again, was the consensus number two player. I mean, Enes Kanter went three, Tristan Thompson went four. This just overall wasn't a very good draft. You look at the rest of this lottery, and we'll just run through these quick. Kanter, Thompson, Jonas Valanciunas, Jan Vesely, who only played 3 years in the league, was drafted sixth by Washington. Bismack Biyombo, Brandon Knight, Kemba Walker at nine. Jimmer Fredette at 10. Of course, only played 6 years in the league, parts of 6 years. Klay Thompson at 11. Alec Burks, Markieff Morris, Marcus Morris went back-to-back. Kawhi Leonard at 15. Nikola Vucevic. So the first part of the draft, the lottery, was actually extremely poor. with only a couple of notable names who have had above average NBA careers, Kyrie Irving, Kemba Walker, Klay Thompson would be the only ones really picked in the lottery that would fit that bill. Burks and the Morris brothers have had nice careers, but are certainly not stars. Kawhi Leonard at 15 and Vucevic at 16 are both all-stars. Tobias Harris at 19 was a little bit of a late bloomer. Kenneth Fareed at 22 had a good start to his career, but is out of the league now. Nikola Mirotic, kind of the same thing. He's back in Europe. So there's a little bit of depth in this draft. And then actually Jimmy Butler was the final pick of the first round by the Bulls. But there certainly wasn't the star caliber talent in the lottery. And it definitely is easy to see why the Wolves picked Derek Williams at two. They didn't need to take a center in Enes Kanter. They already had at the time on that roster, they had Kevin Love. And I think this was right after the Al Jefferson trade. Derek Williams was seen as a better prospect than Tristan Thompson. There's a higher upside there. So there's not much need to defend that pick. Obviously, what ended up happening is Derek Williams, after shooting 57% from three-point range as a sophomore at Arizona, he was just a 30% three-point shooter over his first three seasons in the NBA, primarily with the Wolves. Ultimately, they traded him to Sacramento once Rick Adelman was the coach in November of 2013. That was a straight-up swap for Luke and Mbamute, as the Wolves were just trying to improve their depth, improve their defense, and made sense at the time. And Williams bounced around a little bit. He had a good season for the Knicks in 2015-16. He played in the playoffs for Cleveland alongside LeBron James, was kind of part of the rotation as they went to the finals and lost, and then hasn't played in the NBA over the last couple of seasons, and probably is done playing stateside, but turned into essentially just a decent role player, a guy who got minutes on bad teams and was a fringe rotation player on good teams, but certainly not what you'd want to see out of a number two overall pick. The rest of the draft for the Wolves, they owned multiple picks. They had the 20th pick of that draft as well, which was in the first round. They traded it. Domantas Monagunis was the pick, and that got traded to the Rockets. And then, of course, anytime you trade with the Rockets, especially when David Kahn traded with the Rockets, there was a certain fear of what was about to come. The Wolves traded that pick along with Johnny Flynn, who at the time was still on the team but injured, and a second-round pick to the Rockets. They brought back a couple of guys who were drafted in that draft, Chandler Parsons and Nikola Mirotic, as well as Brad Miller, and then a future first-round pick. The future first-round pick was traded to the Thunder, and that ended up being Andre Roberson. We talked about that on Monday's episode when we talked about the 13 draft. The 2012 second-round pick ended up being Will Barton, who went to Portland and then ended up having and is still having a very nice career. The Wolves got Brad Miller for essentially a year before he retired. Mirotic and Parsons both passed through the Wolves organization that night and then were part of this continued trade back. The list of players that were at one point property, and I don't like using that word, but that's the best way to describe it when we're talking about draft rights, I guess, of the Timberwolves on that night, Domantas Monagunis, who ended up going back overseas and not doing a whole lot in the NBA, Nikola Mirotic, Chandler Parsons, Bojan Bogdanovic, and Norris Cole. All those guys were NBA regulars at one point or another, except for, well, I guess all of them were. Cole's about the only one who didn't make a positive impact on a good team. Monagunis was solid for the Rockets. And actually, we just talked about him a couple weeks ago on this podcast. The Wolves, he's playing in China right now, and the Wolves allegedly had some interest in him just a few weeks ago, maybe coming back stateside. Mirotic, for a minute, was an important piece of a good team in New Orleans, a rising team in Chicago. Chandler Parsons, of course, had a really nice career, got a nice contract before injuries set him back. Bogdanovic has really emerged as a legit star. And, you know, we talked about this at length a few weeks ago. He received more all-star nods or votes from the players than Karl-Anthony Towns did. So number of really good players that passed through the Wolves' fingertips that night. Other good players that were passed up by the Timberwolves, all in the name of trading back to accrue money for this buyout. Bogdanovic was the top pick of the second round. There were plenty of other regulars, too, that were drafted. I mean, we talked about Parsons. John Luehr was a solid second-round pick in that draft. And Etuan Moore as well, who ended up playing for Tom Thibodeau in Chicago and is still in New Orleans now. And then the final pick of the draft was Isaiah Thomas, who for a while was seen as one of the best steals in draft history, made an all-star team, I believe, at least one, as the final pick of the entire draft out of Washington by the Kings. Yeah, he made two all-star teams when he was in Boston. And so just a really deep draft, not the draft for the Wolves to be trading back incessantly during. But unfortunately, that's what went down. And looking at heading into the draft, the Wolves had a number of picks, and then they ended up with just Derek Williams to show for it. And then Brad Miller, who was also acquired on draft night. Of course, you know, that having him outside of being a quote unquote mentor for Kevin Love, there was really no reason to be acquiring him at that stage. The Wolves weren't a contending team, and it didn't do a whole lot for them. But yeah, that's the 2011 draft, and the Wolves are famous for that one. David Kahn is famous for the way he handled that draft, and for all the wrong reasons. All right, we're going to wrap up by talking about 2010. I said we're going to talk 2009 today. I don't think I want to get into that. I think we save that for Wednesday, because that's a beast of a draft. The Wolves entered that one with like 7 picks, and came out of it with, I think, 4 players that they had on their roster, 3 players. So I'd rather get into that and then do a quick overview on Wednesday. So we'll spend our final segment today talking 2010, which is the infamous, man, there's a lot of these infamous drafts for David Kahn. This was the Wes Johnson over DeMarcus Cousins draft. So we'll get into that one next. Okay, let's talk 2010. This draft, despite the... So 2011, the Wolves had a few picks. They spent the whole night trading back. They were front of mind for everybody, but ended up with just one player. The 2010 draft, the Wolves had 5 picks. They ended up keeping only 2 players, technically only 1 player that they drafted, 2 players that were drafted that year, and then they acquired an existing NBA player for a pick. The Wolves had the number 4 pick in that draft. Looking at the players who were available, everybody kind of knew how the draft was going to start. This was the year when there was a consensus number 1 of John Wall. So everybody knew he was going to go there. The Wolves tried to get into the top 3. They wanted either Evan Turner or Derek Favors, and tried desperately. There was a lot of Kevin Love rumors. There was Love to the Warriors rumors. There was, they were supposedly going to try and get into that top 3. They ultimately were smart. They held on to Kevin Love in the face of all these rumors. Then at number 4, they had a choice between Wes Johnson of Syracuse and DeMarcus Cousins of Kentucky. Everyone saw Johnson as the safe, quote-unquote, NBA-ready pick. He was an older college player. He was already 23, about to turn 24, I believe. Had started his career at Iowa State, went to Syracuse, was seen as a guy who could hit threes, get out in transition, defend. He looked the part of an NBA 3-and-D guy, and that was the idea. And because he was older, he could step in and play right away. And of course, David Kahn was still convinced that this team, after his previous draft with Ricky Rubio coming over and Kevin Love, you know, that this team was going to be able to be ready to contend for a playoff spot sooner rather than later. The high-risk, high-reward pick, the more volatile selection, would have been DeMarcus Cousins with a much higher ceiling. There were some questions about his attitude and potential off-court behavior and also on-court behavior for that matter, just some question marks there and what that was going to look like at the NBA level. So the Wolves went with Wes Johnson and what was supposedly the safer pick. And also, I should mention the Wolves had Nikola Pekovic. They had his rights and were expecting him to come over. So they chose to go with the wing player instead. They chose to go with Wes Johnson. And unfortunately, that didn't work out as well. Johnson did shoot almost 36% as a rookie from beyond the arc, but then overall from the field was under 40%. Struggled to get into the paint, struggled to score when he was at the rim, could not finish the contact, and was also just an average defender at best. I think everybody was expecting him to be a legit 3-and-D guy from day one, but there were some red flags in his college profile and also his age. He shot under 70% from the free throw line as well. And then in his second year in the league, Johnson clearly regressed. He shot just 31.4% from three and only averaged 6 points and 2.7 rebounds a game after starting 64 games. So he only had 2 seasons with the Wolves before he was shipped out. The Wolves actually had to attach a first round pick and 2 second rounders to trade Wes Johnson out. They got 3 second rounders back. So basically they ultimately swapped a first rounder for a second rounder and paid that price to get rid of Wes Johnson. And that was, I don't know that we talked about it enough at the time, but the fact that you had to trade a pick for in order to get rid of the 4th overall pick from just 2 years prior is a definitely a low point for David Kahn, although there were, I guess, more than one of those. Later in the first round, the Wolves had the number 16 pick. They shipped that to Portland to get Martell Webster, who had long been a tantalizing option, had come to the NBA out of high school, super athletic, definitely a 3-and-D guy when healthy, but had plenty of injury issues. So they traded the number 16 pick, and again, what was really kind of a win-now type move. The 16 pick ended up being Luke Babbitt, who had a couple of good years as a almost like an undersized stretch four type player, and was good once he got to New Orleans a little later in his career. But Webster was also good when he played. When he was healthy, he was a solid player, as expected, but he had some serious back problems when he was in Minnesota, and then also beyond that when he ultimately went to Washington later in his career. So that trade was hard to get too upset about, and to this day, I get why he did that. So, you know, not a terrible move. And then at number 23, the Wolves traded 23 to trade back and get a couple of second-round picks, which they used to pick Nemanja Bjelica and Lazar Hayward. Of course, the Bjelica pick ended up being pretty smart. Lazar Hayward was actually the last pick of the first round. So they traded the 23rd pick to get number 30 when they got Hayward. And then they also got the 35th pick overall, the fifth pick of the second round, and got Bjelica from Washington. Bjelica has been a good NBA pro. It took him a couple years to come over to the United States, and he started out a little bit almost tentative in his NBA career, came on his last year in Minnesota with Tom Thibodeau as coach, and then moved to play in Sacramento, and has been really good for the Kings. So that also wasn't a bad pick. Of course, the pick at number 23 was Trevor Booker, who ended up being a really good pro. It took him a minute to come on as a professional, and he hasn't appeared in the league this year, but was a good rotational player. You could argue Bjelica is the best player in that trade, certainly better than Lazar Hayward. So that one's also hard to get too upset about because they got the value of those two, you know, that extra pick. But that said, it long-term didn't make a difference. Bjelica didn't come over until Khan was gone anyways, and that was it. So in that draft, I mean, that's going to forever be known as the Derek Williams draft, or excuse me, the Wesley Johnson draft, the Johnson over Cousins draft. And the trade backs later in the draft weren't the worst thing for the Timberwolves. And it's understandable why David Kahn made those moves. It's certainly defensible. And unfortunately, Wes Johnson just didn't work out for the Wolves. And he did go on to play for some decent teams and have an okay career. And he hasn't played in the league this year, but through last season, I mean, he was mostly playing for contending teams. He made a decent career for himself, mostly playing for the Lakers and the Clippers out west, being a rotation player. And for his career, he ended up shooting 33.7% from three, which is in line with what he did early in his career with the Wolves, but somehow still carried this reputation of a 3-and-D player when he was at best average on defense and a little below average for most of his career from beyond the arc. So it's questionable how he was able to continue up that ruse of he looks like a 3-and-D player, so he must be a 3-and-D player, when the results were not all that clear that he was actually providing that type of value for anybody. But at any rate, a disappointing draft for the Wolves, which I hate to end on that note, but it's hard to end anywhere else when we're going back through Wolves draft history. On Wednesday, I do want to talk about 2009. We'll talk a little bit more in depth about that draft. That was, of course, the Ricky Rubio draft, the Steph Curry draft, whatever you want to call it. So there's a lot to talk about. The Wolves technically made six selections in 2009. So there's plenty of different angles to look at this from and to really unpack this. So we'll get into that on Wednesday. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Rejecting the Screen. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.